The opinions expressed here on the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast are solely those of the presenters, not the opinions of Cedarbrook Community Church or Mountain View Community Church.
Hi, this is John Giss, the frontman for the band Electric City, and you are listening to the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast with Steve Anderson and Matthew McCabe.
And we're back, Youth Ministry Sherpas, episode 27.
Hey everyone, my name is Matthew McCabe.
I'm Steve Anderson, and we are here to help youth workers to keep going.
So glad you're listening along.
Thanks for checking in with us this week. Dude, I was up late last night.
Why were you up late last night?
I was watching the U.S. Open.
That's right, you're a tennis guy.
I am a tennis guy. Rafa Nadal was playing, and he was playing... what was his name? I don't even know the guy.
Team.
And Team was pounding him in the first set. Rafa scored 7 points in the first set total.
See, I don't follow tennis. I don't necessarily know what that means. Well, it doesn't sound good.
Well, he won 7 points out of 6 games and was just getting dominated. Never seen that happen before. But then he ended up winning in 5 sets. So it was pretty exciting. Yeah. I love to watch him play.
I watched a little bit. I mean, I'm not a tennis guy. Yeah. But I was flipping back and forth between the Nats Cards games, hoping the Nats would beat the Cards, help my Brewers out. But I watched a little bit of that. I'm not even a tennis guy, and I was pretty impressed. I mean, yeah, that's unbelievable what they can do.
It is. I love watching the U.S. Open, too, because they're just sweating like crazy.
Oh, it's so hot.
Sweat was just dripping off Rafa. He looked like one of those NBA centers, you know, at the foul line.
just water falling.
Yeah, it was literally pouring off of him when he went to sit down between games. It was really exciting.
But it is a beautiful time of year because football is back.
It is back. This weekend is when things kick off. By the time you hear this, there'll already be a couple games in the books, I guess.
Absolutely. When you're talking NFL, like the college, we already got a weekend in, man.
That's true.
I love college football.
I know,
man.
You do. That's not my thing either, but
it's so good. But yeah, I'm also ready to watch my Packers play some real games.
Did you see that your former buddy from Linganore, your former Badger, got like a $32 million contract?
Unbelievable. That kid, I know that kid. You know, it's so weird.
I got the paper that morning and I went to my wife and I said, honey, I'm so disappointed in you. Why did you not give birth to a 6'7", 330-pound son so that we could have all of our financial needs taken care of forever?
Yeah, such a good kid. I'm so glad he's doing well and having a great time out there.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Kind of fun.
Local boy, made it to the big time.
Made it to the big time.
Hey, do you remember when you were in high school?
I have vague recollections of my high school years.
Oh, why are your recollections so vague?
Because it was so long ago.
Oh, okay.
And I think also there's probably a Freudian, like I've probably blocked some of those memories out.
Really?
I don't remember my high school years being awesome.
Oh, okay.
You know, people say they're the glory days. And
yeah.
That was not my experience. Okay. So, I mean, I really love my college and my adult life, but
yeah,
I don't think anything bad happened. I just don't think it was, like, I wasn't a pretty shy kid. I was kind of a wallflower.
You were a shy kid?
I know. Can you believe it?
No way.
I was. I was very, very low-key. So I just sort of blended in. I wasn't part of the in crowd or anything. And so high school was just sort of like, I was a big deal at youth group.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. No,
you were king of the youth group?
I was king of the youth group. Because I was
president?
I was so committed because I didn't have anything else going on in my life.
Okay.
So I was like that. I was that kid who was there every day, every time the doors were open.
Huh.
I was the first one there, ready to go. So now what happened then was when I made mistakes or was a knucklehead.
Right.
It had some serious effects because of my, I don't know,
my
youth group status. We didn't have positions, but people used to call me the president of the youth group.
Oh, my God.
It wasn't a real thing, but that's what they call it.
I think that's a pretty pathetic title to own,
it's
actually.
It's terrible. It's terrible.
I was king of my high school.
Were you really?
No.
Nah, come on.
I was pretty middle-of-the-road kind of kid, you know, somewhat involved, played sports and stuff. But, yeah, I did some stupid things in high school, too.
Didn't we all, though?
We did, yeah. Me and my friends used to do some stupid things.
What kind of stupid things do you do? Come on, Steve. Get honest with us here today.
I mean, we really were pretty good kids overall, but we did stupid things. Really, I mean, these are going to sound so mild compared to other people's stories. But we'd go to the shopping center. We'd put shopping carts in front of the car and just go flying across the shopping center and then turn and watch the carts go flying.
That's dangerous.
When they hit a pole, it is a glorious, glorious thing.
I sit in judgment, but I should tell you, growing up in northern Wisconsin, as I did, that if it is well below zero,
yeah,
and you take one of those hard plastic carts,
yeah,
and you grab onto it from the window of your car and you drive 30 miles an hour and let it go into a telephone pole, do you know what happens?
Oh, it probably
shatters just into a million pieces.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Do not ask how I know that's true.
That's awesome.
Because I'd rather not talk about it.
I would love to see that happen.
Yeah, but then now that I'm a grown up, I think back and I think, well, somebody like that cost somebody money.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I'm amazed at some of the things that I did when I was in high school with utter disregard for how it affected other people.
Did you ever get caught doing any of those things?
Almost. Yeah, I had a friend who was a bit of a kleptomaniac.
Okay.
And so every now and again, we'd be at the mall, and next thing you know, we'd be walking out of the mall, and he'd say, look, I got like 7 Matchbox cars. He stole Matchbox cars. This was way back in the day.
I was going to say, of all the things he could steal, he's stealing Matchbox cars?
Yeah. So, and then he'd shoot him off the bridge into the river on the way home because he couldn't go home with him because his parents would know, where'd you get these? So, and I remember one time, like, I kind of was, like, intrigued by this. Like, you know, he was a bad boy. Like, I loved hanging out with him.
Yeah.
And then he'd steal his stuff. One time, though, I didn't have a Matchbox car, but he had 3 or 4 in his pockets. And we just about got caught. And I just remember being just scared out of my mind. And I just stopped hanging out with him. I couldn't do it anymore.
I got caught stealing baseball cards.
Did you really?
I did, yeah. I was really young. I was only like 7, but my cousin actually taught me how to do it.
What a good
Isn't that
man.
Terrible?
What a great guy.
Isn't that terrible? What a mentor.
What a mentor.
He's like Fagin and Oliver teaching people how to pick pockets. No, he taught me how to steal baseball cards. You know, you just wait till the guy turns his back at the counter and you just reach out and grab them, slip them in your pocket. And we had a little corner store and I mastered this and I stole a bunch of cards. And then one day I got my hand stuck in the cookie jar. And I mean, the guy caught me red-handed. And of course, I burst into tears. You know, I'm like 7. But the thing is, he knew my parents.
Oh, boy. Yeah, now
he
it's
knew
real.
My parents. It's now a small town. Real. Everybody knows everybody. He knew my parents. And so I went home, and that night I'm lying in bed, and I just racked with guilt, you know. And I'm like, I walk out to my parents like, I have something to tell you.
Oh, man, that moment. That
yeah,
moment.
But it was good. I never did it again, so I guess it was good to get caught, right?
It was good to get caught, absolutely.
Sometimes it's good to get caught because that's when things come into the light.
Absolutely.
And you can actually start a path to not do those things anymore, right?
Yes. So getting caught doesn't feel great at the time,
right?
But it's not a bad thing.
Right. So our topic today, we want to talk about, what do you do when kids in your youth group mess up?
When they are kids, when they are what we were when we were in high school.
They make those mistakes, and you know that they need to be dealt with, and you've got to do something about it, but you're not sure quite how to proceed from there.
It's a very complicated process because there's so many different factors involved.
There are.
There's the factor of what did they do?
Yeah, levels of offense.
Offense, and,
right.
And who they are. I mean, it's a messy, messy process. So we thought we'd start with sort of what do you do when information comes to you? So you catch a student red-handed, like you got caught in the baseball card store.
Right.
Or information comes to you from, say, another source. Hey, did you hear that so-and-so did so-and-so or did that? What is the process for dealing with that information?
Yeah, well, there's so many different sources now. There's more sources for that information than there used to be by far, right?
You got social media sometimes.
You got social media. You got the dreaded Snapchat with the red Solo cup in hand, right?
Absolutely.
Which kids are trying, they're learning not to do that because it can get them kicked off the football team now. But if it's a rumor from another student, I will just kind of keep it to myself and think about it and look for other sources of information. I don't like to follow the rumor trail, the tattletale trail too much. Just because I think that breeds something that I don't really want to pursue. But I usually have a sense if what they're telling me is true or not.
I think as a youth worker, I think it's a God-given gift. I think we've been given the sixth sense to go, that information is probably true, or, nah, I think that's not true.
Yeah. Have you ever been just totally shocked, though, at something that has turned out to be true?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that sixth sense is not 100%. I think there are times that I've been told something and I thought, nah, there's no way that's it. And then you do a little more investigating and think, oh, man, that happened.
Yeah. And that's kind of heartbreaking, too.
It is heartbreaking.
Yeah. So you got to process that. Is the information true? What's the source? How likely is it? And that's a hard thing to discern, but you do your best.
You also have to discern sort of where that student is at in their spiritual journey.
Right.
Because how you deal with it changes depending on where that person is in their spiritual journey and or what kind of position they hold in your youth group, whether it be a position you've given them or just for me, I was never elected the president of the youth group, but that didn't change the fact that that's how people saw me. So my actions carried more weight than other students because of how people saw me.
Yeah. Did you get to carry out executive orders as president of the youth group?
No, I tried to get a special chair that I sat in at youth group, but nobody
ever... Did you get like a special pen or a presidential seal, or did you have an Oval Office or anything?
I didn't get any of those things.
Wow.
Which was very disappointing.
You were shortchanged.
I was.
People did not respect the office.
They did not respect the office. The other thing I think you have to evaluate is what your level of relationship is with the student in question.
For sure.
So I know that in the past people have come to me, and I understand exactly what you're saying with the rumor trail, but I'm a big fan of people telling on other people.
Okay.
I know people call it tattletale, but for me, I'm often praying, and I don't want to over-spiritualize this, but I'm often praying that not only for my own children, but for the children I've been given charge over in student ministry, that God would bring into the light that which was done in the darkness. Anybody who's willing to come forward and say, hey, so-and-so was doing so-and-so, such-and-such on Friday night, I think that's a God-given thing. And I know people don't like it. I kind of like it. But if that person comes to me and says, hey, this person, if I have a really good relationship with that person, then I can go directly to the source.
Right.
I could say, listen, this is what I have heard. You need to tell me that this is wrong, or we need to have a conversation about whether this was right. And
I love that about you because you're very direct. And intentional about it. You've got some methods you've taught me over time how to elicit information.
One of my favorite stories is I remember a youth leader called me and gave me some information about a student. And this was a student who was in a prominent position that I had given the student in the group. And they gave me some information that was quite discouraging based on them following Jesus and or being in this position.
Right.
And so I remember calling this person, and I think this is a trick I've taught you over the years. I called this person and I said, I already know everything, but I need you to confirm all of the details. And so don't leave any detail out. If you leave any details out, then I think this position that I have you in is in jeopardy. The reality was I didn't know. I had a rumor. I had somebody who said, I think this happened. You should probably investigate it. And this person just spewed all of the gory details, implicated seven other students.
You've been watching way too much Law & Order.
I love Law & Order.
You and your middle school guys should do like a good cop, bad cop.
But the reality was I had a really good relationship with the accused, offended student.
Right.
So I had the ability to go directly to them. Now, had that been somebody else that maybe I wasn't as connected to, that option wouldn't have been on the table, I don't think. I'd have had to go other directions to try to figure out what really happened.
Which is part of the process, because the more the student has been entrusted with some responsibility, the more you know about their spiritual level and their level of whatever they say they are as a Christian, the higher your expectations, right?
Sure.
So if you have a student that is just kind of a fringe student or maybe a friend of a student who comes, your expectation level is not the same. Why would you expect them to act, you know, with the purity of heart that you might expect from a student leader?
Right, exactly. So, so knowing who they are, what your relationship with them, and sort of what the expectation levels are, completely inform how you deal with the information.
Yeah. How do you think Jesus would have handled it?
That's a really good question. You know, you see in the scriptures that he was pretty direct guy.
Yeah.
You know, he did not mince words, and so when something didn't seem right, he kind of went right to the core of it. But he typically went right to the heart of the issue.
Yeah, and often with kind of an analogous story or a parable or something that it revealed the heart of the matter in a more emotionally charged way. It's like they could look inside themselves and like be like, wow, that really is me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a great approach. I wish I could be better at that.
you go more for the, I'll get the information.
I'm going to get the information. Shine a light, flashlight in the eyes.
Yeah, that would be a gift to be able to do that for sure.
Yeah. So you learn about it, you have the information, then what?
Yeah.
Like, what's the next step? How do you approach a student? Like, again, sometimes I'm very direct, but maybe once you have corroboration or you have confirmation that something took place that was not becoming of a follower of Jesus, or even potentially, you know, in the case of students drinking or something like that, is illegal.
Right.
You know, how do you deal with that? Like, what is, as a leader, what is your responsibility?
Right. So we've had this conversation before, and I think we both have done a similar thing. As we go to that student and we tell them, this is what I know has happened, and we want you to own up to it and put the onus on them to talk to their parents about it. Because, you know, it's easy to be like, oh, I'm just going to go to your parents. But I really want the student to be the one, because I think confession is part of the healing process.
Well, absolutely. And I just think from a parent perspective, you want to hear that from your kid.
Yeah.
Not from your kid's youth leader.
Right.
I mean, you want to hear it, so you'll hear it either way, but it's just better that way. So.
Yeah. And I've said to students, if you want, I'll go with you to have that conversation, but I want you to have that conversation, and I'm going to check up on it to make sure that it happened.
Yeah. I have a 24-hour rule. You know, okay. All right, you have 24 hours to make sure your parents know this, and definitely going to follow up with them to make sure you've given them the full story.
Right.
You know, at the end of 24 hours. And yeah, again, also offer, hey, look, do you want me to go with you? Do you want me to be there when we do it? Which I think goes to this question of and I think this is a really important question, what is our posture when we approach that student?
Yeah, yeah. I guess that gets back to my question, how would Jesus handle the matter? And I think our posture is really important. If we're really angry or, you know, sitting in judgment, then chances are that student's not going to respond real well to us.
Right.
So I think we have to go in with humility and love and, you know, some grace and say, I love you and I care about you and this is a mistake you made and I want to help you get over this mistake.
I think it'd be important for us in that situation, I know this has helped me in the past, to ask myself the question, what am I most concerned with now that I have this information? Mm-hmm. Am I concerned with what I look like as a leader of this student? And I'm just being honest that is that's a human response. I'm this person's youth leader, and they did this.
How does that make me look?
How does that make me look? Mm-hmm. You know, am I concerned with what it makes our group look like?
Right.
Am I concerned with what this is going to do in the group? But, you know, we talk often about being environmental architects of our group. We're trying to create this environment, and now you're screwing it up.
Right.
You know, your mistake.
Look what you've done to us. You brought shame upon our family.
Yeah. And so those are important questions to contemplate before approaching the student, because I think they reveal our heart.
Yeah.
And I think when you go back to what would Jesus do, Jesus would be concerned with their heart, what is happening in their heart, in their relationship with God, that caused them to make this decision. The decision has been made. It happened. So we've got to go back. But it's way too easy to get caught up in the what this decision is going to do to me and you and the group. And then I completely agree with you. I think that student is going to see right through that and not maybe respond as well as we'd like them to.
Yeah. Just think about, we all make stupid decisions and do stupid things. And that's really, it's part of our spiritual growth. Like, nobody is on a constant trajectory upward in righteousness and goodness. No one is. We all take steps back. And so as shepherds of students, we're going to see it even more you know, frequently, it's going to be in our face all the time. Students are going to be moving forward and they're going to be taking steps back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it goes back to that quintessential terrible parenting question that I think youth leaders are susceptible to. What were you thinking?
I wasn't thinking.
The reality was they weren't.
My brain is not developed yet.
Exactly.
No student has ever said to me, you know, scientific studies show that the adolescent brain does not fully reach maturity until age 25. They usually just say, I don't know.
I don't know. Which then is the answer to your question. What were you thinking? Nothing.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So how we approach the student, but then what's the process?
Yeah, the restoration process.
Yeah, how do we, as youth leaders, approach a student with a sense of accountability mm-hmm. for what they've done, but also with a sense of forgiveness and a path towards restoration? Because it feels like those are at conflict with each other,
yeah.
and they need to both be present. So,
yeah.
Steve, how do you do that?
Oh my gosh, I think that's really hard. I think it's really hard. I think it's harder now than it's ever been because I think people are really reluctant to hear criticism. I think students are reluctant to hear criticism. You know, we say we live in a culture where everybody feels entitled. There's a little bit of that, I think. So students are quick to say, well, don't judge me. Don't be
right.
judgmental. And so, yeah, we need to meld in compassion, but also, hey, this needs to change, and this is for your own good.
Right.
So how do we do that? That's your question.
Yeah, I didn't that answer. Is my question.
I intentionally didn't answer, so you'd have to answer.
Well, you know what? If I knew the answer to this question, I probably would write a book, and we could fund the Sherpas.
Yeah, exactly.
With the royalties from that book. Yeah, it's very difficult because chances are, given the position of this student, whether it, again, be a position you've given the student or whether it just be their the way they carry themselves in the group, lots of other people in the group are going to know what happened,
right,
whether
right.
it because of the rumor mill or because they were there or because of whatever. They're going to know what happened. And so I think not only the student in question, who the offender, as it were, we have others that are watching. What are you going to do here?
Right.
And there are some students who are going to be sitting way on the side of,
yeah.
how are you going to hold this person accountable? Because they're sitting in a seat of judgment.
Right.
And then there's other students who are thinking, well, what do you, you know, where's the love? Where's the forgiveness? Don't be judging.
Right.
And so we're in a,
yeah,
we're in a
quandary.
Precarious position.
I was in that position this past year, and I can't talk about the specific thing at this point, but yeah, I felt that tension between what, you know, what was probably needed, but what was ultimately going to help the student the most. And actually, that didn't sound right. Let me say it again. I was caught in this tension between what seemed like the obvious judgment to bring, but what I felt was best for the student in this particular situation. It didn't line up with what most would think. And so I went with my gut on it and chose a path that I think probably bothered some people, but I did what I thought was ultimately best for the student. Whether it was or not, time will tell.
Right, but that's a decision you have to make.
I had to make it in the moment, and I did, and I've second-guessed it 1,000 times, but I did what I thought was best at the
but
moment.
But you probably would have second-guessed it if you went the other way, too.
I would have, yeah.
So because this is messy.
Yeah.
And there is no clear-cut way. And I think you bring up a good point, because not only in situations where a student has messed up, do we have to think about what's best for that student. I mean,
right.
I think that's the primary right there is, yeah, there's going to be what other people think should happen and what's going to help this student restore their relationship with God.
Right.
And draw them closer to Jesus. And that's what we have to go with. But in the wake of that, one of the things we're going to have to deal with is those who have observed it.
Right.
And I think maybe even more so be challenged by that group of students
yeah.
who's sitting in judgment
right.
over that student.
Those students drive me nuts.
Because they have a heart issue as well.
They do.
And they have some ways to grow through this experience as well. And we have to keep that in mind as we go through the process.
So it's a teachable moment for the group, but you can't just blurt it out either because there's still some measure of confidentiality involved in it.
Yep.
But yeah, it is a teachable moment for the self-righteous too.
Yes, it is.
You know, I read Tim Keller's book, Prodigal God. I don't know if you've read that book.
I haven't read that one yet.
But he goes through the story of the prodigal son, and you know the way this story is usually taught is it's about the son who wandered away and squandered his father's wealth. But according to Keller, the way Jesus told the story, the real emphasis falls on the elder brother who was sitting in judgment at the end and refused to accept the good forgiveness and graciousness of his father. And he asked the question, are we elder brothers or are we prodigal children? And the truth is, a lot of times in youth ministry, the ones who give us the most trouble aren't the ones who are actually in trouble. They're the ones who are sitting in judgment over everybody else, the self-righteous. So, yeah, that's a challenge for sure.
Yeah, this whole thing is a challenge. And I know for me there have been times when I've been in the midst of this that it's had me question whether I'm fit to be in this position.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
And yeah, I think we got to fight through that because there's so much to be gained from a kid making a mistake and then being loved and forgived and restored back into his relationship, not only for that student, but for those that watch that unfold.
And the powerful thing is, Matthew, is that I think in youth ministry, our feet are held to the fire in an even more intense fashion than the greater church is.
Sure.
I mean, have you ever felt sort of the judgment of the church leadership because something was awry in the youth group, somebody screwed up? I'm thinking back to, we had a situation a long time ago where we had a couple girls get pregnant, and I felt this almost subtle condemnation from leadership, like, what's going on in the youth group that these girls are getting pregnant? You know, the truth is, I had no control over that whatsoever. It happens all throughout society, and we did our best to restore those girls and love those girls through that process. It wasn't a flaw in the youth ministry. It was just teenagers doing dumb things.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
And, you know, part of my response to that internally was, well, what if we just measure all the sins in the congregation? Why aren't you guys taking care of these other things that are evident in our church body? Why is it just the teenagers who are being held to the fire because of their indiscretions?
Their indiscretions, right, right. I like that idea. We should see if we can implement that.
It doesn't go so well.
No, probably not. Probably
we're
not.
Always going to be on the front lines of this.
I also understand, because you and I, we started this out, we were trying to remember what it was like to be a student. And I think we have churches full of people who don't remember
That's a good point.
What it was like to be a 17-year-old who, without a fully developed brain, and be asked to make some tough, and they're asked to make tough decisions. And I think even more so today, they're asked to make tough decisions every day. And most of the time, they get it right.
Yeah.
We only know about the times that they get it wrong. Yeah. And that's when it becomes public and it becomes a big to-do. And so I think even in this whole process of a student making a mistake and us learning about it and the whole process of restoration, the other thing to keep in mind is they probably made 20 really good decisions and this one bad one, and yet all of our energy is going to the bad one. And maybe we need to flip that script. Maybe we need to start celebrating the fact that most of the time they're not in trouble.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, and it's a key to longevity in youth ministry, honestly. Because if we're always worried about the screw-up, we're not going to really see the bigger picture, or we're going to lose our perspective. And that perspective is that, kids mess up because kids mess up, because adults mess up, because people mess up. And that isn't the end of the story. That's part of the story, that brings them into a better relationship with
Jesus. Makes them stronger, makes them better.
Yeah, and work towards that end and not freak out about it. So, something, if we keep our perspective, maybe we can help some others keep their perspective.
Absolutely.
And stay in it long enough to bring some healing to people. So,
all right. Yeah. So the next time you learn about a student who makes a regrettable decision.
Which will happen soon.
Probably
happened this morning.
It might have already happened today. You know, keep some of those things in mind.
Yeah.
And really ask yourself some of the tough questions. Know that you're in for a long, hard road. No matter no matter how you play it, it's going to be a long, hard road.
It's no fun.
So put your boots on and get to work, and know that, like you said, Steve, it's not the story. It's just a part of the story.
It's a chapter that leads to a great, great conclusion.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening today, the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast. We appreciate our listeners. If you want to check us out, follow us on Instagram. We're trying to post more there, so that's a great way to keep in touch with us.
We look forward to being back with you again next week for another episode of Youth Ministry Sherpas.
Can't wait to see you. I'm not going to see you. This is a podcast. You can't see us. Anyway, We'll be back next week with episode number 28.
Till then,
Sherpas out.